Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Comedian, musician, and radio host Dave Hill has a new collection of humorous essays out from Blue Rider Press entitled Dave Hill Doesn't Live Here Anymore. The follow-up to 2012's Tasteful Nudes and Other Misguided Attempts at Personal Growth and Validation, Dave Hill Doesn't Live Here Anymore explores his increasingly close relationship with his recently widowed father, and also shares his stories of baffling excitement and comic horror while visiting a Mexican prison, getting a bottle of urine thrown at him by a homeless person, and working for Donald Trump for a day. Dave Hill, welcome back to the Roundtable.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So, first things first, how is Lucy?
She's good times all the time. She's good.
Good.
She's my best friend. It worked out exactly as planned.
So what made you want to frame your second book around hanging out with your dad and his moving from your family home and all of that kind of big personal life kind of changey stuff?
It was kind of accidental because what happened was, you know, with the first book and now with the second one, you know, there's things that come to mind where you're like, oh, that'll be a good story. That'll be a good story. You know, the crazier stuff, you know, getting doused with urine by a homeless guy or going to a Mexican prison, working for Donald Trump for one day. Things like that are like, oh, yeah, that'll be good. But then as I was writing that stuff and thinking about whatever else I might write, I was, you know, I go back to Cleveland where I'm from as often as I can and, you know, hang out with my dad. So I was doing all that in between and then started writing about that. And then I realized, like, oh, that's what this book is really about. The other stuff was kind of just tangential to that. So it was kind of accidental because, you know, I was just writing whatever came to mind and then you have all this stuff and you're like, oh, I sure do talk about my dad a lot. And then I hate to say stuff like this, but it was kind of like my therapy or whatever. I hate when people say that.
I know, it's
such
okay.
A cliche, but it's accurate.
Oh, no, of course. I was going to ask if it kind of filled that space in your life, in your mind and in your coping with all the big changes. The writing
I
it down.
I think so. I mean,
and making
I
it funny.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I have a therapist also.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and weirdly, I think the things we end up talking about, it ends up, you know, it happened with the first book. I finished the book and I'm like, oh, this is pretty much the arc of my therapy sessions. And then this new book, not without even thinking about it, I finished it and I was like, oh, happened again. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's only one I pay a guy to sit and listen, and the other one I hope people will read.
The book was published on the 10th. What does it feel like for you once it is out there, once it is published and people can get their hands on it?
It's, you know, exciting and also nerve-wracking because no matter, you know, everything's a disappointment, isn't it? You know, whatever happens, I think I have the same, you know, whether things are good or bad, I kind of have the same, like, oh, man. On one hand, I'm thrilled if anyone would read it. And then on the other hand, I'm like, why isn't this in every home? You know?
Sure.
So really, I'm thrilled to do it. I mean, with anything that I do, stand up or writing or music or whatever, for me, I love doing this stuff, and I'm just speaking in cliches, I guess, but
that's okay.
Yeah, I love doing the stuff that I do, and I'm thrilled that I get to do it and nothing else. You know, I don't have like some other job that I do to keep things going. So the fact that I can do that, I feel like I'm pulling off the greatest scam of all time.
There are pieces in the book that talk about that too, how you've like taken a number of steps at times to find out what you would be better suited to do, and it kind of turns out this is what you're meant to do.
Yeah, I mean, I come from a pretty traditional, you know, Irish Catholic middle class family, and everyone, you know, my dad was a lawyer, my mom ran a temp agency, my siblings all have real jobs, mm-hmm. as they would be called, at
sure.
Thanksgiving and things like that. And I knew 5 years old or whatever, I knew I was just not on board with it, you know,
mm-hmm.
that I was never going to do that, you know. I always wanted to do the things that I do, and I have this weird version of, I do all the stuff I love, and it's this weird version of it that maybe I never would have expected. But I think really I was just talking about this last night, like, you know, a lot of people hate their families. And it, I love my family. It's like me that I have a problem with, you know. You know, from I just wanted to fit in and make them happy and leave me alone, you know, and be proud of me and all that stuff that you want. And so I struggled for a long time with trying to be happy and doing some version of what I like doing in a way that my parents would understand and be able to tell their friends, you know, at dinner parties or whatever. And it didn't work out. You know, my dad still doesn't know what I do, really. He has some vague idea of some of the stuff I get up to. But I think what I realized is I fought it for so long. And once I was like, as a kid, I was always drawing and painting. So I was like, oh, I could be a graphic designer. Because that would be like a responsible use of your skills,
right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Or I could go get a job at a newspaper. Both of which I've done a little bit of and are great jobs that I fantasize about some days. But, you know, I suck at showing up for work. I really do. You know, last week I was just talking about, like, my dog, Lucy, as you know, spilled a glass of wine on my laptop. I had to buy a new laptop and all this other crap. And I was doing a television pilot, and that got killed. And then on Friday I got offered a job writing for a TV show for a few weeks, and I swear to God, that was the worst news I got all week.
Oh, no. You have to go be in the writer's room.
Because I was like, oh, God. You know, my girlfriend's like, you are the biggest jerk of all time. I'm like, I know. But I'm thrilled. I think I'll probably take the job if I can, my schedule or whatever. But it's just truly the getting out of bed and going somewhere that I suck at. I get out of bed every day at 8 because my dog will not let me sleep any later, ever. But to even show up anywhere at any time of day is... I mean, you know, I was late today for this.
Yeah.
I'm horrible.
Not very late, though.
I'm good at sitting home in my underwear, but anything else is a chore.
I have a problem identifying what anyone's day job is when it's like a normal, real job. And I have a huge like hole in my brain for that kind of thing. I mean, like, I'm a radio producer and an interviewer. It makes some sense. And then like my fiance is a web developer and I have no idea what he does all day. No idea at all.
How could you possibly know?
And people ask me like, what does this friend do or what does that friend do? And I'm like, office computer.
Yeah. big man has job, goes to office. And I don't know.
Yeah, I'm like a total child about it.
I feel horrible. My brother-in-law, my sister just moved to Australia.
Whoa.
And her husband got a job there and a friend was like, oh, what's the job? And I was like, no idea.
I think he washes the, you know, washes the opera house. That's there.
Yeah. No. I have no idea. I mean, I have a vague idea. It's like an IT, but I couldn't really tell you at all. And part of me feels like a jerk, but part of me, I realize it's just the man child in me that's just like, you have a grown-up job, and I could not possibly make sense of it. Like, web developer, okay, he has a computer. That's all I know.
Yeah. There's code. There's code involved.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Right.
One of my sisters, she's a consultant of what? I have no idea. Something with grown-up jobs. Yeah, it's like if someone's a bartender or a comedian or a writer or whatever, I'm like, okay, got it.
Right.
But I'm the same way. My brain is flipped to where I only understand if you've rejected society in some way, then I get it.
So you mentioned this a moment ago, and it is in the book, but I'm hoping that as topical as it is, you would expand on the story of working for Donald Trump for a day.
Yeah, it was 2004. I got hired. As one of the phone companies hired me. They were working with another company that I was freelancing for to do ringtones. You know, it was in the 2004, the wild, you know, when the ringtone craze was
right
at its peak.
The ringtone boom of 2004.
Yeah. Yeah, we all moved Everyone moved out west for the ringtone boom. But, you know, it was like celebrities, hey, answer your phone. And Donald Trump, The Apprentice, was on the air, and that was his thing. And we viewed him as a harmless idiot. And now we... he's hopefully a harmless idiot. Anyway. But, yeah, so... This is, you know, actually, I wish so badly I would have written this in the essay, but I wrote the essay sometime last year when the horrors were not as real as they are now. So I didn't think it through, but he was, you know, I was writing like, hey, I'm Donald Trump, pick up your phone. They weren't that much better than that, to be honest. But, you know, you got to do with what the client wants.
Yeah.
And, but here's the thing. Donald Trump was not allowed to say you're fired.
That's so
weird. The catchphrase from The Apprentice, because NBC owned the rights to that. Think about it. Donald Trump is not savvy enough to negotiate the rights to you're fired. His catchphrase from The Apprentice, a stupid reality show. So he can't even do that. If anyone needs evidence of how capable, how he would do at running the country. There you go. Anyway, so I had to write all these variations on that and, you know, pick up your phone, it could be me calling. I thought that was it, that, you know, they would just send me a check, but they were like, well, we want you to come to Donald Trump's office and, you know, be there for when he records them. So I went, of course, you know, you have to see the freak show.
Right.
Yeah, you have to. And I took a shower, the whole deal. And I went, and his office is exactly what you're picturing. Everything covered in gold. In the book, I say, and I hate to quote my book, but I'll do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I say it's as if a blind decorator were given an unlimited budget and told he'd never work in this town again. That's kind of... I feel like I nailed it.
Yeah.
If I nailed it anywhere in the book, it's that. Because it's just horror. It's just the collision of money and bad taste, his office. But I will say he was very nice to me. That day, I liked him a lot. You know, I didn't like him prior to that. And then when he got in the room, I realized, like, you sort of get that he knows he's playing a character. Like, he knows he's this idiot, for the words I want to use, I won't. He's playing a character, and he knows that. So I kind of was like, it kind of makes me like him, you know? But it's my greatest hope that's what's happening. I mean, it is what's happening now with this election, but, you know, I'm hoping at some point he's like, ta-da, I was just kidding. So far, he hasn't.
I know.
You know, I think he was kidding, and, you know, it's just gone farther than he ever expected.
You write in the book about a time you were particularly focused when you first took guitar lessons and learned Stairway to Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And then you write that relatively recently, your dad got the sheet music and played it on piano. And then I saw today that you put out as a book trailer the two of you playing Stairway to Heaven together. And, Dave, I could not love it more. It's such a sweet story.
I have to admit, it's pretty great.
Yeah.
It's better than I would have expected. Yeah, well, the story is, you know, my dad, who to this day has always been like classical and jazz music. There was no rock music ever with him, really. But, when I was like 7 years old, he brought home Led Zeppelin IV. Blew my mind. It's one of the greatest records of all time, as are every Led Zeppelin album, are equally great. Maybe not In Through the Outdoor. No, that one too. Whatever. I don't know why I said that.
It's fine.
That's great too. But yeah, he brought it home, and it, you know, at that point I'd only heard whatever was on the radio, and, you know, I think we had some Beatles records in the house, you know, and the Beatles, you know, they did all right too. But Led Zeppelin, I was just like, who are these guys? Like, they don't even put their name on the album. They're the biggest badasses in the world. Like, who, you know, their name's not even on the album. I couldn't believe it. So I was so intrigued by this album cover and couldn't even think of, like, what could this possibly be, you know? Because it didn't, you know, there weren't, like, guys smiling on the cover like every other album I ever saw. And... You know, I heard it and was just like, whoa. You know, it didn't sound like four guys. It was much bigger than that. And it genuinely scared me to be in the room alone with it, because I was just like, this is something bigger than anything I've ever heard before. And it just, and I never had that feeling again, honestly, until I heard Bad Brains, if you know them. They're a punk band. They're another one of my favorite bands and one of the greatest bands of all time. But same feeling when I heard them. I was just like, whoa, I should not be alone right now. The power is too great. Led Zeppelin from, you know, 7 years old to this day are my favorite band. I have a lot of favorites, but they're, you know, if I had to pick one, they're the ones. And I started learning guitar. And, you know, when you learn guitar, I don't know what kids, do they even learn the guitar anymore? I don't know. Some. But, you know, when you're an old man, like I am, when you're growing up, it's like, okay, smoke on the water, got it. There's things you have to learn. And, but, you know, Led Zeppelin, I was like, that's too crazy. I couldn't even fathom playing that. You know, how would you do that? How dare you even try? And so, but then I was like, I gotta do it. And I learned Stairway to Heaven. My dad, he's always been supportive and enthusiastic about me playing music, but, you know, just kind of lets me do it and, you know, doesn't bring it up that often.
Sure.
You know, he's like, get your guitar off the couch.
Right.
That sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Dad stuff.
But never once has ever told me to shut up, you know, stop playing the guitar, which, you know, everyone else in my family would always do, but my dad never. And so, yeah, like he's 83 now, and sometime last year he's like, you know, because he learns all these classical and ragtime stuff. Like, you can see his ragtime gems.
I know. I loved it. I noticed it right away on his piano in the video.
There's no set design in that shot. Honestly, not at all. It's all, that's just him, you know. And so, but he was like, yeah, I got the sheet music to Stairway to Heaven. I thought it would be really cool to learn on the piano. I was just like, oh, man, I got to hear this. And, you know, I was like, how's it coming? You know, because I thought the whole time, I was like, oh, man, it'd be so cool to rip the guitar solo at the end with him someday, you know. And I was like, how's it coming, you know? Because it's a long song. It's like 6, 7, 8 minutes. I forget. My dad, with his wavering tempos, it's, you know, it could be 15 minutes some days.
Sure.
3 minutes if he's had coffee. I don't know.
Half calf.
Yeah, exactly. Half calf. And so I was home, and I was like, we should follow through on this. And, you know, but then, you know, I was like, well, I do have the book coming out. We should set up a camera and see what happens. And originally I thought, with that video, I thought, oh, this will just be a silly thing. My dad, you know, because he was being like, oh, I kind of know it. So I thought, well, he'll get through the intro, and then we'll make this funny video with me playing the guitar next to him, and I'll just play loud and obnoxiously or whatever. But my friend Zachariah came over, and he just started shooting. And as soon as my dad started playing, I was just like, whoa. You know, I weirdly had that same feeling. It scared me, you know, this. And it was just like, I'm actually genuinely trying through the 6 degrees of separation of life, trying to get it to Robert Plant and Jimmy Page, because I know a guy who is friends with them. And I'm like, oh, man, this has to be the best version, right? So, I mean, yeah, and, you know, when we shot it, I thought, well, we'll just have my dad play it 30 seconds, and I'll tell him to stop, and then we'll shoot the ending thing. But when he started, I was like, whoa, this is something awesome, just hearing him do this. And it's all just one take, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of played the ending, and we did kind of go over the ending ahead of time. If you know the song, well, everyone knows the song. You know, he plays the ending halftime, as we wind on the guitar solo section is like, you know, on the record, if it's like, dun, 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 and my dad's like, dun, 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 you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I tried to get him to play it the other way. And he did it for a second, but then when we taped it, he just went back to his way. So I had to just kind of play this super slow version of the solo, but it's definitely, I mean, I gotta say, it's the heaviest version of that song I've ever heard, thanks to my dad, who doesn't even know, you know, that everyone in the world has seen it by now. Not everyone, but, you know, a lot of people.
Dave Hill Doesn't Live Here Anymore is published by Blue Rider Press. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.